Home, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am wearing my Fadley shirt, established in 1887, but relocated in 2024. We're going to be at the new Lexington Market. I mean, I swear, you could easily throw a baseball from one to the other. I couldn't throw a football, but I could throw a baseball, and certainly could hit a golf ball here on Masters Week, as I had Ed Miller on this week. He's down at Butler Cabin eating $1.50 pimento sandwiches, getting ready for the Masters. And what a week it's turned out to be. Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to be together at Fadley's. This is a scratched off Pac-Man ticket. I got this at Costas on Tuesday because I had a winning 10X ticket, and they took the ticket and they doubled down and they didn't win on the Pac-Man. They won $2. And so I said, give me the Pac-Man scratch off so I can hold. Kind of fun. I'm going to have the new Pac-Mans. Luke is going to help me hand those out at Fadley's from 2 until 3 on Friday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Jiffy Lube and our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions giving me clean water. I've got my Cole Roofing mug here. I want to give a shout out to Bill Cole and give him some love. He's coming on this week. Our 25th anniversary. I had John Allen on at Costas. You'll hear that a little later on in the week. He's one of the narrators. Keith Brewer is joining us this week as well from the Ravens, the band, the Ravens, not the football team. He is also one of the narrators of the 25th anniversary documentary, and it's called No One Listens, Everyone Hears. Luke Jones attended the Liars Luncheon. That's, dude, you live long enough, the Orioles get sold, Peter dies, they call up Jackson Holliday, all this stuff happens. But the Liars Luncheon, I love that they call it the Liars Luncheon because I'm the one that named it that. And it's hilarious that I sit here and watch it on the internet and I play it on the radio station a couple of times. They don't say a word. And but the Liars Luncheon, and no further proof that they are liars and I am not, that they've called me not a media member and I sit here and watch it from the outside. So times have changed. And dude, I have you. I can pull the transcript up. So I'm gonna start crushing you before I bring you on today. As I praise you on our 25th anniversary, you'll love all the coverage of that. But yesterday you said something, or maybe it was Monday, you said something like, we're 10 days into the season. There's not going to be wholesale changes. They'd be admitting that they did things wrong, and it would be a panic move, and it would be, and like all of this, and they call up Holiday, and I guess I wasn't expecting that WNST text on Tuesday night. I don't think you were expecting to send it. It's a little abrupt and a little weird. I'll start with that. I haven't said anything to anybody about it. You're my first conversation this morning.
Let's be clear. This is great news for the Orioles. This is exciting news for the Orioles. This is something that was going to happen, whether it was going to be now, whether it was going to be the end of spring training, or was going to be at some point in the coming weeks. Jackson Holliday is the best prospect in baseball. He's been the consensus overwhelming number one prospect in baseball since a historic 2023 is, mind you, his first full professional major league, or not major league, professional baseball season, where he went to four affiliates and put up eye-popping numbers as a 19-year-old. So this was always going to happen. It's weird, just purely from a timing standpoint. I mean, less than 3 weeks ago, we were talking in Sarasota about him being reassigned to minor league camp. Mike Elias was talking about a desire for him to get more experience at second base and to face more advanced left-handed pitching, whether it be at the AAA level or major league caliber left-handed pitching. And well, does 10 games really satisfy that? I mean, was this a 4D chess kind of move, as I've seen some orange Kool-Aid drinkers suggest? I have a tough time believing that. I do want to say this much. I think as you and I are discussing this right now, and as of late Tuesday evening, they had not announced the corresponding roster move. The team had confirmed it to various reporters, but they haven't announced anything. So I do think we should pump the brakes in assuming that it's just automatically Tony Kemp's gone, Jackson Holliday's in, although that's the most logical move. But again, it goes back to why sign Tony Kemp in the first place. You know, we talked about it at the time. I mean, this is a replacement level kind of guy at best at this point in his career. So, was there an injury? Was it really 10 games was really enough of what they needed to see? And I think he had 10 at bats, 11 at bats against left-handed pitching, albeit did hit a home run and had success against lefty pitching to start the year down at Norfolk. But It's weird, but at the same
Well,
time.
you were at the press conference 5 minutes ago, right? Peter was still alive. Rubenstein didn't own the team. I mean, it was literally 5 minutes ago that you were down in Sarasota at the press conference. He said, not good enough, left, all those things that you and everybody else sort of beat him up a little bit about. And, you know, we now have the awakening where it's okay to criticize Mike Elias. I'm not wearing orange underwear. I can call him a genius and still criticize him. Same thing with DaCosta, who's a coward and a genius as well. But for me, with Elias, this is 12 days ago? How long ago was that? What
It
long
was
ago?
It was 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
I mean, it was
All
two
right.
and right. I mean,
my
you know,
tan's
less.
wearing off. I can't, you know, it's been
Oh,
a while.
you're thinking about it in terms of when opening day was, which was a little less than 2 weeks
And
ago.
that was 5 days before opening day,
It was a week. It was, yeah, 6 days. Yeah, exactly. So from that standpoint, and I'll read you the quote. And this was one of the money quotes from when he was speaking to us outside the Orioles, you know, facility in Sarasota. His quote was, "With Jackson, I think it's important to zoom out a little bit. He is way, way ahead of the curve. He's 20 years old. He just turned 20 a couple months ago. He's reached Triple A. He's moved through the minors at a pace that we haven't seen in a couple of decades, arguably. When we first think about developing and completing the development of a player of his talent, it's something we have some experience doing. We've done it now with Adley and Gunner and guys like Jordan Westberg. There are a lot of considerations involved so that when they do start their major league careers, you want them to be able to stay." So we said it at the time. Look, there was merit to what he had to say. For me, it wasn't the decision to send him down. It was the mismanagement of expectations that you went the entire offseason at the winter meetings, interviews with MLB Network on Sirius XM, wherever it might be, talking up his chances. He goes to spring training. He puts up numbers in the Grapefruit League, good numbers. Now, not talking, hey, you 250. He did hit a home run. You know, he hit 300. You know, had a good batting average. You know, did everything you would expect. So if it was true that it was all about that, then don't talk up, you know, don't hype up his chances more than what they actually were.
Well, I
so,
just hope they were honest with him, right? So if the whole idea is to and I just heard your quote again, right? And I remember hearing it the night it happened and watched it on the internet and all that. And because it was like the talk of the town, like, and I kept thinking to myself, and this is the 55-year-old in me and the 42-year-old in Elias, or however old he is at this point, you know, younger than me, and a 20-year-old kid who's got a dad who went through all of this and has been prepared for all of this, and the cameras are rolling, right? I mean, they'll videotape the manager in there saying, "You made it, kid," and like all of that now goes into it that wasn't around when it was Sparky Anderson or Earl Weaver, you know, calling in a player to say, "You're going back to Rochester," or you're coming north with the ball, with the big league club. I wonder how they managed him. Right. And I would also say that if it's about him going down to Norfolk and just getting loosened up a little bit and raking and saying, "The minute you rake, we'll bring you up. We're not trying to F with your clock or F with Boras or screw you up," or, you know, "Peter's gone, John's gone, we're, you know, nobody's beating on me about your money or any of that stuff. We just want to make sure that when we call you up, you don't do what Colton did last year, which is it gets real big for you real quick." And we've had that happen. And as he pointed out, a couple of our guys have struggled when they come up. We don't need Jackson Holliday to hit 429 the first week, but we don't want him hitting 029, you know, and bad weather and like all of these things, good pitchers, big crowds, big, let him ease in, let him go with it. The guy's his own age. Let him go down and be big man on campus for 10 days and be disappointed and bring him up. I don't know that they were thinking before yesterday morning that they were going to bring him up. I mean, it is curious, and I really do. And I would ask you this because you spend a little bit more time with Elias, and he's Mr. Man of Mystery, you know, as I see him from the outside. What was he really thinking? And whatever he says to you today is what he says to you. As we found out, he said what he said to you 3 weeks ago, and you took it seriously. How dare you? And hold him accountable. How dare we? But what's he really thinking? Like, why here? Why now? That's the part for me that I'm trying to get a grip on.
Yeah, and that's where I'm still struggling with this because everything you just said in terms of wanting to build up his confidence, whatever it is, I mean, is 10 game, did 10 games really make that big of a difference? You know what I mean? So I've seen a lot of people cite this, and we've talked about it. The Orioles struggles early on here offensively until the bats broke out a little bit with the opener at Fenway on Tuesday, but they did face a lot of left-handed starters. I mean, it comes down to this. He's going to face left-handed starters at some point in time. If he's, I mean, maybe they try to platoon him a little bit early on, protect him against the toughest lefties early on.
Randy
But
Johnson's gone, though. You know what I mean?
yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's not as though they faced Randy Johnson over the first 10 games of the season when they were facing some of these lefties. Although certainly they've had their issues against lefties, and that's going to continue to be a storyline with Jackson Holliday on the roster or not. So you know that's where it still feels a little odd to me, and that's where I'm still waiting to see officially what the corresponding move is to make sure this was isn't an injury or anything like that. You know, I'll just throw it out there. And again, I have no idea. Jordan Westberg didn't play on Tuesday. He didn't pinch hit. He had played what every game up until that point. I'm not saying he's injured, but I'm saying until I hear that it's Jackson Holliday in, Tony Kemp DFA'd, then you know that's where I am a little more confused about this, just from the standpoint of everything you just said in terms of wanting him to go down and get his con, he was confident, right? I mean, he hit 311 with seven extra base hits and a 954 OPS in 48 plate
Well,
appearances
that's
in the
what I'm
Grapefruit
asking
League.
about that Friday that you're at Sarasota. He comes and tells you this. What did he tell the kid that day? I mean,
So that's where I'm just, and again, I'm questioning that part of this. I am not throwing cold water on the fact that he's up. I think, and one thing that I
we'll get to
tried to,
that in a minute, right? We'll have the rest of the time to figure that out. We're scratching our heads saying, why Tuesday night? Why Fenway? You're trying to wear him out a little bit there before he comes home because it's going to be a big crowd? Or, I mean, because I would assume we're at Fadley's Friday. I mean, point that out, giving away Pac-Man, non-scratched off Pac-Mans, non-winning scratch-offs, hopefully, for lots of folks. But people are going to come down Friday, right?
I mean, and it's a first Friday night game at the ballpark.
They
First
got like a
homestand, obviously.
student thing they're doing, right? I saw that on an
Yeah, they have
email.
student night. I mean, I think it's double the price it was when I was a student way back when. But hey, that's the price of
Just the
professional
cost of
sports.
education.
True, very true. But yeah, I mean, it's just it's just one of those things. And again, I'm not throwing cold water on the excitement of it. But it's weird to me in the sense of what did 10 games really change, or was it a case of they just thought, okay, we're going to send him down. We're going to give him an extra, and he didn't play. He even played shortstop a
Well, they
couple
kept saying he
games.
had
Nor, or,
224 at bats or whatever, how many bats he had
well, I'm just. I mean, I'm talking about these 10 games. What did you really accomplish for his development that couldn't have been accomplished with him being on the opening day roster and even just sitting him out against a few of those lefty starters, right? I mean, do what they have done with, they did that with Gunnar Henderson a little bit early on,
Maybe
where
this
they
is
at
as
least dropped
simple
him
as
in the
looking at
order.
Mateo and Urias, like all of us, like we looked at it 3 weeks ago and just saying, he's better. Like, he
Right.
helps
And
us, he's given us a better chance to win. And if that's the honest to God answer that he went to bed Monday and didn't consider it and woke up Tuesday, or he's been pondering it for 5 days, or he's even would be forthright enough to say, you know what? We probably should have brought in Northwood. We screwed this up. I mean, and if he says that, good for him. That's the way they should communicate with people. Because in the old days, they would say that, or we would ne never have a problem saying, we probably could have done that better. Brian Billick would never have a problem saying, we probably could have done that a little better. John Harbaugh never says it was, let's say Fonzie, that would be admitting that I'm not a real man and I'm not the king. And like, if they screwed this up, some fans think they have, certainly media people. And if he comes up and hits 429 the first 10 days, we're going to say the same thing. Like, where was he? They lost a couple of games they could have used him when the bats were. But the bats have been quiet. All these things we've talked about. But to your point, I don't say it feels like a panic move. It just feels like something we're going to be scratching our heads about until Michael Elias is forthright, which I don't know that these guys can be for. I don't know that he could stand up and say, I went to bed Sunday feeling this way. Mateo, Arias, we should have brought him up and we apologize to him and I hope he goes and hits 500 and we have to pay him $1 billion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's just, but I would still even say on the flip side of that, I mean, are you really making it a decision based off of 10 games? for him and his readiness, or even for the club struggling, right? I mean, we talked a lot about, we'll get to Colton Cowser in a moment, who had a big day Tuesday at Fenway. He's starting against right-handed starters. We're kind of seeing a platoon already start to manifest, at least for the time being, of Colton Cowser starting in left field against right-handed pitchers and Austin Hayes being relegated to sitting a little bit more. Now, that doesn't mean Austin Hayes is going to be DFA'd or should be or sent to the minors or that he's benched indefinitely. That would be crazy after 10 games, but you still adjust your thinking. So that's where I just kind of look at it, and it just feels a little weird to me in the sense of, you made the decision to send him down. Look, whether that was going to be service time playing a major factor or not, of course it's going to be brought up. It's this day and age where we've talked about that for years. You know, I mean, I think back to Chris Bryant a decade ago with the Cubs, right? Was kept down for X number of days. But long story short, and whether we're going to get a little bit of clarity or not, and again, wait and see what the roster move is. If it's Jordan Westberg going on the injured list, then maybe it was driven more by an injury, you know? So, and again, I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just trying to piece this all together in a way that feels like it would be logical from a standpoint of viewing it through the lens of a baseball man and a baseball operations department that I think very highly of. And that's where I look at the 10-game sample and just say, it's weird. But that said, he is in line now because he spent less than 2 weeks in Norfolk to start the season. He's in line to receive a full year of service, assuming they don't send him down at some point, assuming it's not a Colton Cowser scenario where he really, really struggles. And no one wants that to happen. But, you know, it's 178 days, I think it is, to accrue a full year of service. And he's in line for that. And also, the Orioles remain in line to benefit from the prospect promotion incentive program, which, as you recall, they got the 32nd overall pick because Gunnar Henderson was on the opening day roster last year, won Rookie of the Year. Jackson Holliday wasn't on the opening day roster, but he's in the majors quickly enough within that deadline of days that if he wins Rookie of the Year, or this is the other part of it, he finishes top three in AL MVP at any point before he reaches arbitration. So, you know, obviously putting Super 2 scenarios aside, these next couple years, they would have a chance to get a draft pick that way. It's one or the other. Like Gunnar Henderson, if he wins MVP this year, the Orioles don't get another draft pick. But he would be, you know, he keeps his eligibility. The Orioles maintain their eligibility for that prospect promotion incentive program that was introduced with this latest CBA. So again, it's weird to me, but at the same time, I don't think it's so weird to ruin the excitement of this or to view this through a lens that it ended up being this colossal big deal. I think I will continue to say that they should have just had him up on opening day. And if you wanted to sit him against a few left-handed starters, he would have been a heck of an option pinch hitting off the bench. To your point, they dropped a couple games where, hey, they could have used his bat rather than Tony Kemp pinch hitting.
Well, maybe that literally these guys watch the games like we do, yeah, and a lot more intently. And, you know, once it's all over with, maybe they just change their minds. And yeah, to your point, it's inevitable, right?
Right.
Like it was inevitable in Sarasota, but if he's hitting 281 right now and he's struggling to kick the ball around a little bit, they could at least say, hey, you know, and now they can say whether there's a need with Westberg, whether it's a bench situation, whether it's Kemp or Mateo or Urias, just finding, making sure they're going to play him every day when they do bring him up,
yeah,
making sure they're real comfortable with that, making sure they got their outfield thing figured out, make sure nobody else got hurt, all of that. I question it, but we questioned it in Sarasota 3 weeks ago, and
sure,
he's here. And again, it was inevitable.
Right.
This was not an if, it was a when and a why. And the when is now, and the why we're asking. And why now? That's question number one.
Right, right. And I mean, it goes back to what I said about the initial reassignment to minor league camp, that everything that Mike Elias said at that point was true back in October or November. So for me, again, it was the messaging throughout the offseason. I'd say the same thing now. Everything he said of why they sent him down, was that really satisfied in 10 games? And again, was there an injury?
Listen, the Nasty Nestor and me and the Peter Angelos burn factor for all of us, and the sport, and the agents, and the way money is managed, and the amount of money. If they call him up in June 18th, we all know why, right?
Right.
So, I mean, then there's your why. So they didn't do that, right?
Sure.
And Peter's dead and gone, and John's on a beach somewhere, and they're not running it like that.
Yeah.
But how are they running it? And that's a very fair question to Elias to say, how are you running it and why? And this is your number one guy. And like, if you would have told anybody 6 months ago, this is how you were going to manage it, we'd all be scratching our heads, including the kid himself when you put him on the bus to Norfolk 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, it's a fair question to ask why. I think it's a credit to them that they're not going to
screwing him. Right.
And we'll have to see again, if he hits like Colton Cowser did for a month last year, then he's probably going to be back in the minors then.
Well,
if
then
he
you'll
struggles
rewind
to that
Sarasota
degree.
Sarasota tape back to right. Mike Elias and say he watches a lot of baseball.
Yeah. And then the service time thing becomes a question again, right? Because then he would be at a point where his service time would be under that. What is it? 178 days. So, you know, it's a little weird on that front, but at the same time, they aren't messing with the service time. By all accounts now, based on what we know right now, as you and I are speaking about this in talking in real time, we think he's going to be able to accrue a full year of service, and the team is not messing with him in that way. And look, I mean, Jackson Holliday, come what would it be, 2030, I guess it would be. If this kid's as good as advertised, that's going to be a very lucrative value there. So I'll throw out the other. As we're talking about scenarios, I'll throw out another scenario for you because this one's really fun. This scenario would be you do have new ownership in place who hopefully is willing to spend money. You have a general manager to this point who has not been able to spend very much money, and we know why. But is there a subsequent announcement coming at some point that Jackson Holliday has been signed to a contract extension that would buy out his first 2-3 years of free agency, something like that? I don't know. Again, I'm just spitballing here because, again, it's 10 games. It's a weird.
The kid hasn't had a big league at bat. You want to give him $150 million, do you?
Do you pay attention around baseball? I mean, this is becoming more and more the norm for talking about. And I'm not saying that it's going to happen. You know, I understand.
Well, it never would happen around here before, right? So we have, especially in the aftermath of Chris Davis and stuff like that with the old group, right?
Chris, that's apples to oranges. We're talking about a prospect who's...
No, I'm talking about the old man thinking he wasted money, like investing money.
Oh, sure. Just,
where that would have been.
Oh, but the whole, you know, and again, I don't think this is that. I haven't gotten that sense from anyone, but that would be another scenario where you'd say, all right, we bought out his first 2 or 3 years of free agency. Then we don't need to worry about his service time because we don't need to get the extra year. We already are paying for that extra year, and we're not going to manipulate his service time either. So let's call him up and get him to the big leagues. And he's probably going to take his licks a little bit early on. Adley Rutschman did, and Adley Rutschman was 4 years older, 4.5 years older. Gunnar Henderson did, and Gunnar Henderson was a year and a half older than Jackson
well,
Holliday is right
now. You're watching Bobby Witt
run
around getting paid, and you know, I mean, the kid from the Red Sox the other night. So yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm just saying that would be the other scenario here where this, you know, where it smells a little funny, the timing of this. That would be the other scenario where, hey, call him up. He signed.
Well, we don't really know Mike Elias's real strategy or real theology on that, right? Right? Like,
yeah,
literally,
well,
right?
I mean, it's right. I mean, it's one of those things where, and so many people talk about service time. Look, in reality, there are very few prospects where it's truly fruitful and makes sense to manipulate service time. And obviously now with the PPI program where Gunnar Henderson fetches you a draft pick because he won Rookie of the Year, or you know, if Jackson Holliday does that, or Jackson Holliday finishes third in MVP voting next year, would fetch him a draft pick, you know, it's assuming he's here to stay at this point in time. But you know, you still look at it through the lens of if this is truly going to be a premium all-star superstar kind of player, then that extra year of club control, that could be worth $35, $40, $45 million, $50 million by that point in time, the way that salaries escalate. So
yeah, if he's the best player in baseball, he's a $50 million player in 33rd.
So it is something you have to at least consider. At the same time, you're trying to win in 2024. You have a team that has Corbin Burnes for 2024, and that's it. at this point in time. So there is urgency to maximize what you can get out of him. And, you know, one of my biggest, strongest arguments that, you know, that I wrote about this 4 days before they sent him down as far as why I wanted to see Jackson Holliday on the opening day roster is not just because he's the best option and better than Jorge Mateo or Ramon Arias or Tony Kemp, who was since, you know, signed. It's also, he's probably going to struggle a little while. You know, like I said, Adley Rutschman was more than ready as a 24-year-old 2 years ago, and he struggled for about a month. Gunnar Henderson was older, a year and a half older, and he struggled for the better part of 2 months last year, you know, after his cup of coffee late 2 years ago. So, you know, it's part of it. So for me, part of that was rip the Band-Aid off in terms of those early struggles. If you have the conviction that you think this kid is that great, that special, as everyone thinks he is, then rip the Band-Aid off in April and May and let him rake and be one of your best players the rest of the season, rather than if you're going to call him up in May or call him up in June if you're really worried about trying to save.
Well, think of Machado's role that year he came up. There were a lot more veteran players on that team, but that was a team that needed to win right away and needed him to perform, you know, by the end of the year, and he was, for the most part.
But even that scenario, Machado was not called up for his bat. He was called up because they needed someone to play third base. They had Wilson Betemit playing third base, who kicked every other play that came to him. He booted
it. But you had all the concerns about starting clock with him, and they never did sign him. And you talk about things that, you know, generational players they had access to. We always sort of forget about him. We talk about they've always stunk. Their farm system always stunk. They always drafted. I mean, he didn't stink. He just didn't last your 5 minutes, right? It feels like a blip.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was here through July of 2018. So, I mean,
he was on.
but that was an August call-up. He had never played above double A. And this is where, obviously, it's different regimes. That was over a decade ago. It's hard to believe.
Era.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it was over a decade ago, different regime. And keep in mind, he had never played above double A, Jackson Holliday, albeit it wasn't a very long stay in triple A between last September and this first 10 games of the International League season this year. But Jackson Holliday has at least played some at second base. Manny Machado had played, I think he played two games in the minors at triple A, or at third base. I mean, now, after we would come to learn, he had been working out at third base before games for quite a while. In fact, I think Bobby Dickerson was even going down to Bowie and working with him at the time. But that was a very different scenario. And that club had not won 101 games the previous year, right? I mean, that was such a Cinderella out of nowhere kind of club. So, you know, I mean, we're going to see how this plays out. Again, all of the why here to me is still draped in excitement and optimism, and in the big picture sense, whatever this 10 game thing was, not that big of a deal in the big picture.
And Michael Weiss might point that out too.
Yeah.
When June comes, we'll be happy he spent a little time in Norfolk, and he'll probably be happy he spent a little time with his buddies and got to go hit the cover off the ball and have 26 hits in a game. That's all good for it. That was good experience that he spent those 10. I mean, like, I'm speaking like Elias. It was good. He had a great week there. He had a lot of fun. He'll come up here. It's not as much pressure on him.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, that would be something where I would kind of say, I mean, I don't know how valuable it was to him, but was there a major downside to it? And that's where I would say probably not. Right. I mean, definitely not a major downside. Now, people can quip about maybe if you lose the division by one game to the Yankees, you might look back at that first nine games or 10 games without him and say, could he have helped you win a game? Sure.
Well, if Urias doubles down the line instead of hitting a pop-up, with the game on the line, and they win a game because of a couple of these other, and, you know, I mean, McCann won a game for me. Every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Orioles baseball. Luke Jones is here. We're going to be at Fadley's on Friday. I want to remind everybody, we'll be live from 2 until 3 with Luke. I'll be live 2 until 5. We'll have Pac-Man's, not pre-scratched off, like real scratch-offs that you can scratch off and you can win. That'll be on Friday. And we'll be doing that every Friday that the Orioles are home. So the 26th, we'll be down there again. I've started to book fun people and celebrities for the Friday show. So it's going to be a hoot. We'll have a good time. But one thing that we didn't consider when I put all this together, and even the delicious crab cake you're going to have at 2 o'clock on a little before 2 o'clock on Friday, is that Jackson Holliday will be in the building, right? Like, there will be something about Friday's game that's going to have a little juice and jam. And listen, we could talk about their bats on Tuesday, awakening and the Fenway thing and all that, but Friday's going to be like a momentous, it's going to be a party.
No question about it. And I mean, you mentioned Tuesday, Corbin Burns with another outstanding outing. I mean, he's an ace. When he takes the hill, you're expecting to win, and they have won. So, I mean, there's so much excitement there. Yeah, absolutely. So that was exciting. I mean, Colton Cowser is another reminder of guys will struggle when they first get to the big leagues. I don't expect Jackson Holliday to be baseball god as soon as he steps foot in Camden Yards, but the expectations are going to be high. The buzz is going to be there. It's a great thing. Again,
he is the natural, right?
Whatever was weird about this, whatever the last 3 weeks was, I don't think that should overshadow how exciting this is. And look, Nestor, I mean, Adley Rutschman's already an all-star catcher, has already been a guy that's been in, you know, gotten MVP votes, not first place votes, but MVP votes. Gunnar Henderson, same thing last year, rookie of the year. Got some, you know, he showed up on MVP ballots. But when you consider Jackson Holliday does not turn 21, cannot drink a beer legally until December. And amidst all these other young players who've already made it and others that are on the way and everything that's happened at Norfolk, this kid has the potential to be the best of all of them, purely because of what he's already done to this point. What he did last year to play for four affiliates. He started the year at Delmarva, finished the year at Norfolk, put up the numbers that he did. The family, you've talked about it. I mean, Matt Holliday being, what, a seven-time All-Star, whatever he was. Not a Hall of Fame player, but a guy, probably Hall of Very Good, you know, or Hall of Good at least. So to have that pedigree, to have the accelerated timetable for his development, to be the first overall pick less than 2 years ago, making his debut Friday night. I mean, this is the guy that might be better than Gunnar Henderson. He might be better than Adley Rutschman. I mean, this might be, you know, let's dream for a moment. I go back to my contract.
What number
extension.
Is he going to wear? What's his jersey going to be?
We don't know yet. I've seen some people say number one. You know, I don't know. We'll see. I should have the fashion tweets ready to go, but I haven't heard.
You know,
officially,
I am doing a countdown for the 25th anniversary documentary. I think it's going to be released in late April. That's all I'm going to say. I just want to make sure that I have the dates right on it. But I'm going to do a countdown, and I've already got my Al Bunbury video ready from when he bowled at our Pinland Duck Pin Challenge back in 1998. John Buren documented that, so I have it on videotape. So when I think of number one, that's all, the only number one I can think of, right?
Yeah. So we'll see. But, I mean, boy, there's a lot of excitement here. And just the upside of this young man who, by all accounts – you know, even talking to some of the veterans in Sarasota, you know, those couple days I was in the Orioles clubhouse before he was sent out. I mean, guys know, players know, and they know this kid, by all accounts, looks like the real deal. Look, he's 20. He's probably going to struggle. He's going to struggle a little bit.
I said 20. I have to laugh out loud. He's 20.
He's 20.
I mean, that's where Mike Elias could begin any press conference in Sarasota by saying, look,
he did.
He's 20.
He did. Yeah. I mean, he did. He even said, I mean, I read you the quote a few minutes ago. I mean,
have you met 20-year-olds? I remember being 20. It was 35 years ago, but I remember it.
I remember being 20 and, like, I didn't know how to write a check.
I didn't know how to pay my bills, that this kid's going to land at Fenway Park now. Now, he did all this when he was a baby, right, was a kid with his father and, like, so this isn't as big. It's like Barry Bonds or some of these other people.
Yeah.
But if you come off the farm and –
it's still big.
It's still big. Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, when you can see it, but until you experience it for yourself, I think that would probably be what some of his teammates would say.
Well, yeah, he's
as ready as he can be.
Boston and Copley Plaza today, and, you know, getting on the team bus and going to Fenway Park and walking in, his name's going to be in a jersey in Fenway Park with Baltimore Gray on it. And, you know, I mean, that's and the other part is dad's got to be like on a red eye, right? So like all that's going on, right? So, you know, it'll be big enough that he doesn't need Camden Yards, and He'll have that Friday. I mean, he'll have a couple.
Oh, no doubt.
He'll be able to exhale for a day or two. That's another part of this. That if I'm Michael Elias, being the old fart, thinking this thing through, I'm like, man, you got to give him a warm up back somewhere. And by the way, the Fenway thing, man, they all left in the fifth inning. The weather was even nice. I mean, you picked him for last place. I'm sorry. I apologize to you for like giving you a hard time Monday. PU, they stink. You were right.
Don't we love small sample sizes where we just a team's either good or they stink after one game? But no, I mean, it was a good win on Tuesday. Corbin Burns was excellent. Colton Kowser, I mean, he's taking advantage. He already has more extra base hits this year than he had all of his stay in the majors last year. I mean, that shows you, one, how well he's playing right now, and two, how dramatically he struggled last year. But like, got the win. Danny Coulomb, another good inning in the bullpen. I mean, he's been terrific for them. And I mean, this is
Red Sox playing like the Bad News Bears too, by the way,
exciting.
Kicking the ball
and
around.
And hurt, you know, another pitcher hurt. I mean, it's really, at this point in time, the way these pitchers are falling left and right. And by the way, mind you, Kyle Bradish going to Aberdeen, going to be starting a rehab assignment very soon. This is when things start to get real in terms of, okay, how real is it that he's going to be able to pitch? How real is it that he's recovered from a small tear, in his UCL, whatever? This is when we start to find out. When you get him in a competitive environment and the bullets are flying, this now to me is, okay, how does the elbow respond now? If it continues to go well, then hey, maybe we will see him on the mound in the not too distant future. But this will tell us way more than bullpens and throwing progressions. So, but I mentioned all the elbow concerns, guys going on the IL left and right. I mean, that's where if you're the Orioles, you just want to, make sure guys are getting through starts, make sure guys are recovering from bullpen outings. And if you get that, boy, you're already at an advantage compared to some of these teams that are losing pitchers left and right, it feels like.
All right, we're going to be at Fadley's on Friday. I will have the Pac-Man scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Jiffy Lube and Liberty Pure Solutions sending us out on the road. You've had a Fadley's crab cake. You came to the party that I threw at the holiday. So you will have your first Fadley's crab cake at the new Lexington Market on Friday. We were at Costas all day on Tuesday before the Orioles beat up on the Red Sox. I spent some time with John Allen. My lifer pal is one of the documentarians of No One Listens, Everyone Hears, as well as Todd Crandall, who I grew up with, who's Councilman Crandall now in the 7th District, talking about the bridge. And also an old friend of mine, Joe Gold, who's done beer here for a million years. We had a great beer conversation with John Allen as well about Key Brewing over in Dundalk and the bridge We'll be talking a lot more about the bridge. So on Friday, we'll be down at Fadley's from 2 until 5 live. Luke will be there from 2 until 3. Stop by, say hello. Holiday, celebrate. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop singing Madonna songs and welcoming Jackson Holiday to Baltimore, hun, with a crab cake.